Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. On January 1st, Yvonne Spicer becomes a woman of many firsts. First mayor of Framingham, first popularly elected African-American female mayor in all of Massachusetts. Yvonne Spicer likes to build things. She's got a scientist's inquisitiveness and an entrepreneur's boundless energy. That combination took her from a hardscrabble childhood in Brooklyn to a doctoral degree in education to leading a startup division in educational advocacy at the Museum of Science. Now, of course, she's been elected into leading the biggest startup project of her life so far, converting Framingham from Massachusetts' once largest town to a fully functioning city government. It won't be easy. Framingham residents only narrowly approved a new city charter back in April. The margin was just 112 votes. And as mayor, Spicer has to bring those disparate factions together and oversee the mechanics of creating a municipal government. But based on the conversation I had with her earlier today, it seems that she's more than ready to take on the challenge. We went to Framingham to talk with Mayor-elect Spicer to hear about her vision for the city. But first, we started by hearing the remarkable story of where she got all that drive. Mayor-elect Yvonne Spicer, it is such a pleasure to meet you, and thank you for speaking with me today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I like to get to know people as well as possible, and one of my favorite things to do is to ask about their family. So can we start there?
Sure.
Tell me about growing up, and tell me about your parents.
Well, growing up, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. I am the eldest female child. I have two older brothers, and I was raised to believe that I could do anything. There were no limits.
How did they get that message to you?
You know, I was always very curious how things worked, and I remember when I was about 7 years old, I took the blender apart. I took the screwdriver and took it apart because I was curious how it worked, how what was in there causing the blades to go around, and I just wanted to see how it functioned. And I remember my father looking at me and, you know, and just smiling. You know, I certainly couldn't put it back together, but I was encouraged to pursue technical things.
But your father passed away when you were 10, right?
When I was 10, yes. My father died when I was 10. And in those short years, he taught me an awful lot. First of all, he loved my mother dearly, and I observed that. And, you know, whether a Friday night they would put on records and dance around the living room. And when he was probably pretty sick at this point, and I certainly didn't realize that he was home with us most of the time. But he taught me how to cook, and, you know, he would pull the chair up to the stove, and, you know, by the time I was about 10 years old, I could cook a full meal.
So he was sick for a while, but you didn't know it?
Yeah, my father was in and out of the hospital. He was a diabetic, and that's what he ultimately died from. He had a massive heart attack, but complications from diabetes. And from that point, I mean, here's my mother, you know, three small children, a 5-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 13-year-old, and she went into overdrive and working three jobs at some points, you know, just being that beacon of light for me. And I'm truly a remarkable woman. Truly a remarkable.
Dorothy. Dorothy, mm-hmm. That's her name.
Yeah. Okay. Dorothy Spicer was pretty amazing.
Tell me more about her, because she was working hard jobs too, right? I mean, not office jobs.
Right. My mother cleaned houses. At one point in her professional career, she worked in the jewelry factories in Manhattan. And so, you know, as my father was sick, she needed to be closer to home and have a little more flexibility in the schedule. So she cleaned houses. She, you know, worked office jobs, late night, mostly cleaning type jobs. Growing up, and even as a 12, 13-year-old, I would go and clean houses with her in the summertime.
Okay, so that gave you time to spend time with her, because I imagine, obviously, she was hugely busy. But you must have seen how, like, the other half or the other 1% lives. I don't know what kind of houses you were in.
We were in sky light, beautiful penthouse apartments in Manhattan and on the Upper East Side. With doormen, and I remember asking my mother, how do we ever get to live in a place like this? And she said, baby, just get an education. Just get an education, and you will one day. And I sometimes think about her always admonishing me to whatever job I did, do your very best. Never sidestep something. You know, always put your best effort forth. And so one of the most amazing things, she worked for this family, and their daughter went to charm school. Yvonne Spicer went to charter school as a result of my mother's, well, if it's good enough for their daughter. And she worked an extra job to, you know, afford a little extra money to pay for me to go to charter school.
Wow. What an amazing woman.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that is so impressive about my mother later on in life, neither one of my parents ever saw the doors of a high school, let alone college. But later in life, my mother was probably in her late 60s. At that time, she went and studied for her GED.
No kidding.
I was so impressed with her. And you know, and the thing about it is, she says, well, I always enjoyed learning things. I just, you know, as a result of family life and needing to work and to have four college-educated children, all four of us have been to college, and it's pretty remarkable.
So I'm not sure, quite sure how to ask this, but I'll just ask you straight on. She was working all these jobs, raising her children, and doing this despite the considerable challenges that society puts in front of black women.
Yes.
I mean, did she ever talk to you about, you know, like, about, like, you're a young black woman, you're also going to have to overcome, like, the structural stuff that America puts in front of you?
You know, I think we were taught very early on, first of all, you love people for who they are. All people. And I never had limitations around people that I could spend time with or learn something from. But she also told me, you know, she said, you can't just be good. You got to be better than good. And at the time, I kind of understood what it meant. And that's why she just said, always do your very best. Always. Yeah. And that's something, you know, I certainly worked hard at it, doing my very best at everything, whether it was being a good student. I went to Catholic school for middle school, which, once again, my mother heard it was a better education and worked another job to pay for me to go to Catholic school.
Maybe I'm projecting here, but I feel like growing up, seeing your mother work so hard. And having vision, right, and matching effort to that vision. Like, you know, like, that school is going to be better for my kids. I'm going to work an extra job to send my kids to that school.
Yeah.
Maybe you didn't have to tell yourself this consciously, but did you say to yourself, I've got to do something with all that she's giving me?
Yeah. Well, oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I just sometimes think, you know, I used to sit and ponder, and after she passed away, and it would be, what would Dottie do? What would her wisdom be to me on them? And thinking about the ways in which you engage, and you say, are you being your best self?
Yeah.
Are you being your best self if you do that?
Wow.
And these are snippets that I've lived my life by, and they've been so valuable. You know, and I think I reflect back when I took my very first job, and when I came here to Framingham.
Yeah, because we have her to thank to bring that it was she launched you to go to Framingham, right?
Well,
or
it,
encouraged you.
Well, what she had encouraged me to do was, you know, I had my job interview, and I remember not. I love the person that was interviewing. I felt very good about him.
This is for a teaching job,
mm-hmm.
right?
But the teaching job was a subject matter that was not necessarily my strongest suit, and at a grade level that was not necessarily my strongest suit.
But we should say what it is, right? It was
woodworking. I was teaching woodworking at the middle school level. And I was much stronger in high school and also teaching architecture and engineering, drawing. And I asked my mother about this, and she said, well, if that woodworking is your Achilles heel, get in there and master it. So most people go to their first job doing what they're best at. I went to a job that was my weakness more so than a strength. But as a result, I learned very early on never to shy away from something that is challenging, that you may not know all the answers, but certainly get in there and do your very best. Yeah. And I've done that throughout my whole professional career, and it's expanded my repertoire of things that I can do.
You got to wonder, though, why they didn't offer you a high school architecture teaching job, though.
Certainly at that time, they didn't have one. I eventually did go to the high school and teach in architecture and engineering. But I was the first woman ever hired in Framingham to teach tech ed.
Wow. Remind me what year this was.
1985.
Okay.
1985.
we're going to be talking about a lot of firsts with you, Mayor-elect. But just so that folks know, you have a doctorate in education, and obviously you did tremendous work at the Museum of Science as well. So, but before we wrap up sort of talking about your fabulous family, when did your mother pass away?
She died a week after 9/11. And I remember it very distinctly because she was in the hospital and she was ill, and I was going to New York every weekend to just spend time with her, and because I was here working, work all week and drive home to New York. And it was when 9/11 happened, I had just left New York. I see what's happening on television, and I try to call New York and I couldn't reach anyone. So I panicked. Just for days, for two or three days, I could not reach anyone. And so I got in my car and just drove to New York because my whole family lives there. My mother was, you know, still in the hospital, and she passed away a week later. So, you know, and I think about it. We had a little chat before, and she said, you know, I remember her saying to me, "I'm just tired. I'm tired. I've given you everything. You'll be fine." So it's the kind of thing where she's always here. Yeah. And she is so proud of me right now. Both of my parents are. And my brothers, my sister, they'll all be here for the inauguration. So the good part is her legacy lives within me. So, and I truly am a blessed woman, because I've had incredible experiences. You know, I've gotten to a place in life where I don't even put limits. When someone says, "What are you? You know, what next?" I said, "I'm open and receptive, and I always feel that there's more that I can do, more that I can learn, more that I can experience in life." So I try to keep an open mind about all that I'm doing, and to be in this place today, right now, what we're about to embark on is pretty amazing and exciting.
I'm so profoundly moved and thankful for your parents and all they gave you and all they instilled in you, because Framingham needs it now. The soon-to-be city needs your drive.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the new opportunities and challenges ahead that you're embracing and facing as Framingham's first mayor. Let's just be honest. It's still kind of a divisive issue whether or not Framingham should be a city. So after you become inaugurated, after you get inaugurated, what are you going to do about that? Because I guess what I'm trying to say is how much of that is going to influence how you approach the job?
You know, part of me getting into the race was that we get to choose the kind of city we want to be. You know, I wasn't polarized on either side of the issue. I felt that there are some things that we could certainly benefit from being a city, and there are so many things about our character that were cultivated as us being a town, so that I want to make sure we bring along with us. I have purposely made sure that I include the voices of even people that were opposing me in this election, because I think that's how we heal as a community, is to make sure that everyone's voices included.
Right, because that's one of the major, major differences I think people feel between a city structure and a town structure, right? Because the history of the Massachusetts town is all about citizen engagement, right? Direct citizen engagement and citizen decision making. So I mean, maybe it's too early to ask because you're not that far down the path, but like, how are you going to help preserve that, which is still important to so many people here?
Well, you know, as a part of our charter, there are boards and commissions that, you know, I do get to appoint citizens to, and I'm going to be very reflective of our community, making sure that all of our boards are as diverse as possible and getting varying perspectives. But I also look at those opportunities to engage with the community. community and having those community conversations and getting out with the public and having town hall type meetings where they can ask questions. They can, you know, tell me about issues that are going on in their neighborhoods. Direction I'm moving is hiring a person that is a director of neighborhood services that works right in the community and getting a pulse on what's happening in the community, as well as working very closely with the council members who represent 9 different districts within the city. Because I think when people have a link to the mayor's office, they feel connected. And I think that's the part of the engagement piece that we don't want to lose.
You know, this is such an amazing opportunity for Framingham, right? Because this basically never happens in Massachusetts, right? You get to build a city governance structure from scratch. It's like the opposite of what most Massachusetts cities have to deal with. They got to deal with sort of the baggage of history that comes along with it. So, I mean, what are the kinds, one or two of the kinds of things that you think you do? You mentioned neighborhood services, but are a kind of a priority for you?
One of the key priorities is economic development in the community. If we can build the capacity for businesses to locate here in Framingham, such as high-tech kinds of jobs, where people can actually live and work in Framingham, we are ahead of the curve, and so to speak. And I also am particularly focusing on the downtown area of Framingham. If we can anchor some of these businesses in downtown, people can live in the downtown, work in the downtown, and then also it helps drive some of the development in downtown. You know, my hope and my vision is having our downtown be a destination on a Friday night, similar to some other communities where people will say, where are you going Friday? We're going downtown Framingham, you know. And that's what I'm hoping for, is to rebuild, particularly in the downtown.
Yeah. You know, there are lots of different models of leadership for city mayors, right? There's the sort of, you know, like I'm the big picture visionary mayor. Then there's the opposite end of the spectrum of, you know, the sort of nitty-gritty, I'm going to fix all your potholes, municipal services mayor. I mean, where do you think you might fall on that spectrum?
I think I kind of fall in the middle. You know, in some ways, I certainly am a visionary, and the fact that I work in a startup division of the museum for the last 12 years that didn't exist, and it has grown, and through the vision and implementing the vision, it has grown over the last 12 years, and I'm pretty proud of the work we've done, the team of us have done at the museum, and I'm looking forward to bringing some of that vision to Framingham, but also looking at, yes, the day to day has to get done, the trash has to be picked up, and that happens in Framingham. Snow removed, the potholes fixed. Those are some definite important things to the community. So it's not reinventing the wheel, but it's also saying, how do we access some good best practices? And that has already started to happen for me. Talking with other mayors from across the country, I have had a chance to reach out and actually meet a number of new mayors, newly elected mayors.
Who have you met?
I actually, a few weeks ago, met Vi Lyles, and she's in North Carolina, in Charlotte, and I also met the new mayor of New Orleans.
Wow.
And it was about 25 of us. We did a training of new mayors, but also with some veteran mayors. So all told, about 75 people or so. But that's the beauty, is that no matter what you're facing, there's another mayor that has faced it as well. So I certainly built my little network of people that I could reach out to for a number of different issues.
What's some of the best advice you received from those veteran mayors?
Oh, the best advice was, have fun with this job and enjoy it, and remember that you can't solve all of the challenges immediately. So, be gentle with yourself, and listen, do a lot more listening, so that was a general consensus about that.
So just a couple more questions, because you are a very busy woman. I should have asked this a lot earlier, and I'm sorry that I didn't, and forgive me for being, maybe this is might just be a kind of silly question, but you had a really great thing going at the Museum of Science, and I'm just wondering what made you think, I'm going to run for mayor for Framingham.
You're absolutely right. I certainly love my work at the museum. And once again, it goes back to the lesson I learned from Dorothy Spicer. Get in there. I've mastered my job at the Museum of Science. I mean, it started from a vision, and I felt like I was leaving the museum in a very good place. And I saw this as an opportunity to bring my experience to something brand new and lay the foundation to set this city on the right course. And it seemed very exciting to me, and it's certainly not foreign to me to start something new and work in a direction that is providing good leadership, vision, and a strategic plan to implement.
You know, I just want to note explicitly that Framingham has beat Boston on a very, very important measure, and that is having elected a person of color into the mayor's office. So well done, Framingham. But you're also believed to be the first popularly elected African-American female mayor in Massachusetts. And so I guess that brings us back to Dorothy. Because I think I'm thinking about what she told you about, you know, that you're going to not only have to be good, you're going to have to be better than good. Are you concerned that also applies to this job, that people are looking at you as a black woman in this major leadership position? And not that they don't think you can't do it, not that, but that the expectation of you is going to be higher than it might have been if a white man had won the race.
I have been the first in a lot of situations. And in this election, where nearly 59% of the people voted me into this office, and Framingham is a 70% majority. And so most of
majority
my
minority
majority white
majority white majority
yes,
white
majority
yeah, yeah.
white and I think much of the effort in this community to elect me to this office was more about my experience and my vision and less to do with my ethnicity. Now, not that that is not going to be a factor, and, you know, it certainly it is always something that I'm consciously aware of, but I don't let it limit me or change the course of my actions.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mean to make everything about race, but also this is America in 2017, yes. And we can't not talk about it as well.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. And it is, you know, yes, for some people it will be a factor. But I think for the most part of what people in this community wanted and needed to hear, first of all, that we have a government that people can participate in, it's transparent, and that I came with no baggage. I wasn't beholden to any special interest groups. I'm new to politics, so I don't owe anybody any favors. And so that's the kind of thing that resonated with people's spirit. And the fact that they kind of looked and said, yeah, well, this lady is kind of smart and she's, you know, she has had a proven track record. And I just felt that they felt confident in me.
And folks should know that you go boxing in the morning. I just wanted people to know that.
I do indeed. And I really enjoy, you know, taking boxing class. And, you know, not only is it a stress reliever, but you just feel very empowered.
Yeah. Well, Framingham Mayor-elect Yvonne Spicer, it has been such a pleasure to speak with you. Congratulations. And promise me that we can come back in 6 months so we can talk a little bit more about the nitty-gritty of getting Framingham launched as a city.
Absolutely, absolutely. And thank you for having me today.
We spoke with Mayor-elect Spicer in Framingham earlier today. Back in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.